Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by the host with the most, the Hall of Famer, the difference maker, Mr. Tony Sager. Tony, how are you, sir?
Great, Sean. Great to be back on with you.
Fantastic. And we have a very, very special guest, Mr. Alan Watkins. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you both.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Alan, if you could, for our audience, just, you know, briefly introduce yourself about roles you've had in the past and the current role of CIS Controls Ambassador. If you could walk us through that, that would be wonderful.
That's great. One of many roles, obviously. I was thinking I've got started in technology, I guess you call it, back in the late 70s. And cybersecurity, which wasn't cybersecurity back then, it was information security, actually, probably definitely in the 80s. I worked for the city of San Diego for 36 years, 12 years. The first 12 years was actually in law enforcement, and came out of that into an IT position, where I was an IT manager in the wastewater department for 18 years. And out of that, I jumped into the citywide IT department, and I was the infrastructure operations and security manager, sort of three major hats that I wore for the last 6 years. One of the things is getting involved with CIS as a government agency. We were looking at what kind of controls we needed to put into place. So we're, of course, looking at NIST, but we also looked at ISO. So I sort of blended some things from both NIST and ISO into a city plan. And then this other curious thing popped up, SANS 20 security controls. I'm sorry, I don't remember the year that I first looked at it, probably 2002 or 3, somewhere around that period. It posed itself as an alternative to all the hundreds of controls that were in the NIST document. And we tended more towards NIST than the ISO, but the ISO gave us some good ideas. So I got involved with looking at the SANS controls, which again, the earliest one I could find recently is the version 5.1, which was after SANS during the year, I guess, it was that international committee that was put together.
the world-renowned Council on Cybersecurity.
Yeah.
You're looking at about one half or one third of the entire team. Yeah. The council, by the way.
I'll bet. And then soon after that, obviously version 6 went to CIS and became that. So my connection to CIS actually came around the back way, my more formal connection, through Will Pelgrin, who was the manager of the MSISAC. And so at being a large government agency, it was interesting. I would get a phone call from the state of California CIO's office telling me there was a city of San Diego computer that was pinging something, or there was a malware found on it. And they're interesting. They said, you have to do something or we're going to personally hold you responsible, just because of my position. But anyway, so I ended up finding out where they got the information from, which was the MSISAC. So I said, well, why go through? I don't want to talk to the state of California. So I talked to Will, and they weren't taking cities as members at that time. They were only taking state government when they first started. But then I worked out an arrangement with Will that the SOC would contact me directly instead of going through the California CIO's office. So from that point, I found out that the MSISAC was linked with CIS and the controls. So naturally, I just sort of jumped in on that. When I left the city, I went into private consulting. That's where I actually used the controls more because I would deal with small businesses. In addition to helping doing the updates from version 6 to 7 and version 7 to 8, I wrote a book in there somewhere, which is basically, it was how a small business can create a cybersecurity program using implementation group number one from version 7. And then I updated it to a second edition of the book to version 8. And my focus on small businesses, and Tony, you know, Tony Krasinski from he's my buddy over in the, I always forget if it's Australia or New Zealand.
anyway, Zealand, I believe, but yes, is, yeah, but a great, great guy. And a great,
he
great
is.
Friend.
And so he and I sort of worked together on a couple of collaborations, and his focus as a small business was like less than 25 people. And my, you know, the U.S. government defines a small business as having 500 or less, which is a lot of people. So my focus was like around 100 or less, or 50 or less. So, and even though I was consulting, my paid consulting was for larger contracts. I would give free like webinars or public seminars to small businesses and go and talk to them about what they could do to be cyber secure. And, you know, the iterations over the time talk about cyber hygiene and things like that. So it was just getting used to talking to the business and educating them about some simple things, because a lot of stuff is policy related. They don't have to spend a lot of money to get technology. So and that's been my focus pretty much ever since. I've blended it into teaching. I've been teaching for National University online master's courses for cyber since 2012. And where I can fit it into the curriculum, I do. It doesn't always fit, but in several of the classes where we're looking at NIST controls or other, or, you know, they actually look at ISO as well, I throw in CIS because it is a good alternative to, and whether it's a stepping stone to those others, or if it's just the end game for some businesses, but the students at least have, knowledge now of another alternative as they're looking at what they're doing either for their career or for helping somebody else. So I guess my final position, in addition to being, before I was an ambassador, I was a CIS champion. They didn't have the ambassador program. So in 2016, I was a CIS champion, and then it became a supporter in 2018. And then I think in 2021, it became an ambassador or something like that.
Well, your history with us is very rich and mirrors the evolution, you know, of the controls and of the company. And I think you really caught the spirit of it, you know, and one of the sort of key predecessors to that, as you said, early to mid 2000s was, at that time I was running the vulnerability analysis work in defense for NSA. So red teams and blue teams and crypto people, you know, zero days and all that. And just what I was seeing was failure at large scale. And it was frustrating to realize, well, I mean, these are solvable problems, but people are getting mired down in gigantic control catalogs and really complex documents and processes. And we're just struggling with, how do I get started? The term I used internally, you know, before the controls was the 80-20 of security. I'm a math wonk, right? 80-20 Pareto principle. And the idea was, can you build a good foundation and do it at low cost, rational cost, so that you can, and for lots of folks, and you talk about, you know, 5-person companies, right? They'll never be able to afford to have you on staff. They can maybe get a little of your time. Yeah. And they're not going to buy, you know, multi-$100,000 tools. They're not going to subscribe to complex threat feeds. And so how do we help people get to that first stage? And that was really one of the key motivators that led us to here. And then, you know, you're one of the prototypes, Alan, of the ambassadors, right? Someone who saw value and just on your own decided that this made sense. It was teachable. It was accessible for lots of folks. So we really appreciate that your pioneering work. We're just starting to really acknowledge it, you know, through the ambassador thing. By the way, for the audience, ambassador doesn't mean we have fancy dinners and formal events.
I've been to none of those.
Exactly. This is still a nonprofit group working with lots of great volunteers, but we appreciate the rich history that you have with us. So again,
it was interesting going through that champion, because it was a license agreement. Your legal team didn't have anything to deal with a non, you know, it's not like I was going out and selling the CIS product or anything. I was selling the product as a freebie, you know, more of an education to the businesses. So it took a couple months for the legal team to figure out how to put that into a document.
No, that's a great point, because again, you know, for a period of time, it was very informal, but there was a notion that we have continued through this day, which is, you know, work with volunteers, sort of community consensus, create content and give it away and support the, you know, but I would say a free labor is most effective with a professional infrastructure behind it. That's essentially what we provide. But the idea was to make the content not only sort of understandable, but widely available, and not lock it behind paywalls and those kinds of things that would be maybe economically viable, but not in terms of the impact that you're trying to get. And so, yeah, we had to kind of figure all this out. Like, I don't know if you ever heard this story, Alan, but Clint Kreitner, employee number one, once said, and he had several careers before he came to CIS in 2000, but he said, "Tony, I've never run a business where I give my best product away for free. I've got to figure out how to make this work."
Yeah.
And, you know, and thanks to good fortune, smart people, and, you know, great advocates like you, we have been able to make it work, I think, really effectively.
Well, and the other benefit I see is the collaboration, international collaboration in developing them in the first place. We had a lot of really good discussions with, Tony and I, but other people in other countries. And I'm glad to see recently that it's been expanding to a lot more countries than, you know, just even like a few years ago.
Absolutely. Well, of the many careers that you've had, Alan, absolutely fantastic. It's, author, professor, officer, champion, supporter, and that, you know, I'd stick with champion. I want to be a CIS champion. That's it.
That was the original one. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. But when, just for the community, the audience, what is a CIS Controls ambassador? What are you involved in? What do you actually do in that space?
Well, I include being involved in helping develop like the updates for the controls, because to me that's critical that they've got. Even though I'm not practicing security right now, you know, I had, if I count it correctly, 25 something years actively doing, you know, cybersecurity work. Maybe not 25, maybe closer to 20, but still. So first of all is contributing to the control definitions and the guides. I think it's important to have those guides that are out there for implementation. But more to me, the ambassador is like a government ambassador. It's to represent, you know, in this case, CIS as a viable option for organizations to take a look at developing necessary security. So, and again, like I said, my paid consulting time was usually large projects, and my CIS time was small conversations with small businesses. And I would work through, I'd go to like the local chamber of commerce or the Better Business. I tried the Better Business Bureau actually a couple of times and was shuffled off to a few different places, but I did have some good conversations with, and I can't remember his name now. He was one of the directors in Washington, D.C. for public information for them. And so he and I worked maybe together for about a year, and we put together a couple things. But getting out there, and again, I've got this heart for small businesses, as I was one myself, that they just can't afford or have they usually don't have the knowledge to get what they need for security purposes. I gave an example a few weeks ago for, I can't remember who I was discussing it with, a local dry cleaners. It was owned by, I think, I'm pretty sure they were Chinese descendants, but it had four or five generations of the family working in dry cleaners. The teenage son was the tech guy. And he's the one who usually spoke the most English. So, you know, the grandparents were there. They did the cleaning and the pressing and the, you know, the stuff for the clothing. The mom and dad ran the business side of things, as far as I could tell. But they weren't concerned with how they collected money, how they, you know, tracked customers or any of that other sort of stuff. So talking with the teenage boy, and teenage, I'm talking like 17 or 18, getting them to understand as they do credit card transactions or debit card transactions, that data has to go somewhere. Now, they were on a direct dial up to the bank or whatever it was back in those days, but they were thinking of transitioning to a computer-based system. So they had to know, or he had to know at the very least, how to protect that. And if he was going to do it, obviously there are PCI types of requirements that they would have to comply with if they're going to actually transact, you know, money transactions. So going from that extreme to a transportation company that wanted to put mobile tracking and management systems in the vehicles. So, you know, sort of what, I mean, it's a common for UPS and FedEx and DHL and all the other delivery guys now. They've got their smartphone out, they drop up a package, they take a picture of it, they scan the barcode, and instantly it goes back, you know, I'll get an email that says your package has been delivered. So, you know, that level of tracking wasn't around in my early days, obviously, those. And having to think about the transition of paper documents, you know, having the customer sign a piece of paper, they drive back to the office, someone in the office processes that paper, to live, you know, pretty much instantaneous transactions. But those are big companies, and they do have IT infrastructure and they have security. But the mom and pop local delivery folks wouldn't have that. So again, the ambassador is the person who goes out and makes people aware, and as much as possible helps them get going down the right path. That's what I would say.
Fantastic. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to look at some of delve into the story, really review the considerations if anybody else is thinking about becoming an ambassador, and also learning about the CIS controls community. So we'll be right back. Think your cybersecurity is reasonable? A fancy lock on the server room door just won't cut it.
No, it won't, Sean. Fortunately, CIS Secure Suite comes with tools and resources for building a truly reasonable cyber defense program.
And you can test it too. Membership helps you evaluate how solid your defenses are using risk quantification.
That's key for complying with U.S. state data privacy laws and proven you've taken the right steps if a breach occurs.
Now through November 19th, save on a new membership with a multi-year discount.
Want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Start secure and stay secure with CIS Secure Suite.
Learn more by visiting cisecurity.org/CIS-SecureSuite.
Okay, we're back. So, Alan, I love that story. It's one, you know, we're affecting security at those that need it the most, right? Those that don't know the next step. And the other thing I thought was very interesting with the involvement of the controls, and I don't know if I've ever thought about it this way, but I do feel, and, you know, Tony, if we've done the iteration of the controls, that this is really memorializing that knowledge, that experience over, you know, many, many years and all of the contributors and how that's passed on to the next generation through generations of the controls being built. Never really thought about it that way, but it's the way Alan described it made me think of that. That was it's a way to memorialize that. Such an interesting approach.
Now, I talk about our work. Excuse me. I talk about our work at CIS sometimes, Sean, as we are actually translators. You know, that is most of the information that kind of drives a cybersecurity business. You know, threat feeds, flaws in technology, business use of technology, et cetera, is actually unreadable, unreachable for most businesses. And I'm talking most businesses, like in the literal sense. It's full of esoteric details and acronyms and to be able to, so why do folks like us read that stuff, Sean? Number one, it's entertaining, right? It's fascinating, but it's also what you're trying to do is translate it into action. Right. So for the average small business of 5 people, 50 people, 500 people, you know, they wouldn't read the Verizon report at all, but they wouldn't read it to try and understand it. They want to know, what should I do? If these are the most important problems. What do I do? And the what do I do? And this was the growth for me in the middle of my career, right? It's not a theoretical problem, but it's a practical problem. I have a limited budget. I'm in this circumstance. I only have one person that speaks English on my team, you know, whatever. And so being able to pull together both the technology, the business use of it, the understanding of attacker tradecraft, the business consequences, right? And the goal is to translate that, you know, from an infinite number of data points of badness into a small number of positive, constructive things you can do about it, and present it in a way that's accessible, readable, et cetera, right? So Alan's work. And then when we do that, I mean, there are folks like Alan who are directly involved, as they said, in the content. And I describe it as you can get the benefit, right? This is the memorialization part you talked about. If you want the benefit of people you could not even find, much less hire, we have translated their knowledge into what we think is the set of things that you really ought to focus your attention on, even if you don't understand all that. And the model is, you know, we do the same in public health and other domains, right? We don't ask people to understand every aspect of, you know, immunology and the transmission vectors of disease. We ask them to observe certain behaviors. Wash your hands, get your shots, don't cough on people, avoid these kinds of situations, right? We translate, I'm cartooning a bit here, but we translate this knowledge into action that people can take, even if they don't really have the background to understand or the time. And Alan, one reason I really appreciate your advocacy, by the way, is my community where I live here in the rural part of Maryland, right? My doctor is a one-man practice. My dentist is a one-person practice. My lawyer is a one-person. And I hope if they have a spare moment, they are reading the latest medical and legal journals, not cybersecurity stuff, right? I want them to focus on their business so that I get great service, but they're all struggling with the same issues that you talked about. I have to be able to, you know, manage patient scheduling online. I have to be able to deal with the health insurance companies online. And so they're faced with the same problems that big companies are, but without the resources to deal with it. So sorry to riff on there, Sean, but your point, I think, is, again, the notion is to translate and capture a lot of complexity and then present it in a way that's usable, right, accessible, that can help drive behavior.
Yeah, I'll follow on with that. So my degrees are in business administration, not in technology. I'm pretty much self-taught in the technology field because I felt it was better to have the business understanding than it is to have technology. And when I was hiring staff for many years, I would find people that are technically skilled enough but had interpersonal skills, because it's a lot harder to train interpersonal skills than it is the technical skills. So I'd find people that would work well with others. And then if they needed technical training, you know, boost them up in that. But that way, I'll just share one interview comment that I had. The question is basically, what would you do if an end user called for support on something? And this candidate's answer was, well, I'd assume the user did something wrong and I'd then fix it. Because the user's always wrong, basically, is what he was saying. And, you know, I think I asked him one more question and then said, thank you very much. And don't come back, because, you know, you can't be blaming the user for everything. There could be a technical problem. But so for my aspect, especially in management, being able to talk to department directors or the mayor and city council or whoever the case may be, you can't techno speak to them. So my staff, I had really good technical staff, and we would have technical discussions, and then I would go up to either horizontally or vertically up to whoever the customer was in the city departments and give them the business speak of what we're trying to do from the technology side of things. And for the small business, same, even more important, I think, is how do you relate the business success to having that core cyber hygiene. You know, that was the focus, cyber hygiene. You only need to do these 10 or 20 things to be, you know, mostly safe. If you want to be more safe, you do, you know, additional things. But what does it mean when you put in a firewall? You know, what does that mean for the business? Not how to do it, but, you know, how does it impact the business? So I think being able to do that translation to the business side and not definitely don't bring in the technical side unless they ask for it.
I can tell Sean feels your pain because that's his work as CISO for a security company has a lot of that you know, keeping us out of the minutia, the deep technology. But at the end of the day, it comes down to risk for the company, right? The decision making that we have, and where do we invest, and all that. And you just revealed, by the way, to our audience, Alan, this is like you're supposed to, you know, hold the secret for all of us here that this is job security. We need to flood people with esoteric technical details that keeps us employed. Folks like you are like destroying the myth here. You're being practical.
Yeah. So the other thing that you didn't mention, Tony, was the communities in the CIS that use the CIS Workbench. And there's a lot of discussion in between iterations of the controls coming out. Lots of discussions on benchmarks, the risk management aspect of it, policies and the template policies that you put out, all of that with broad community, you know, input has really helped also.
No, that's a great catch, Alan. It is, again, it's the community building that's really important, and the expertise. And you know what makes our business model successful, right? Is this industry, and you know this is not a secret. The industry is full of incredibly talented people who care about this stuff, who want to see a safer, more confident world, and are willing to put their time into it. And in some ways, we just provide a mechanism that allows that to happen. But yeah, those are incredibly rich discussions. And you know, as I'm sure you know, right? We're chewing on the ideas for version 9. And a lot of those ideas are popping up in these conversations among our volunteers, on Workbench, our social media platform. You know, again, part of this is how do we pull all that into coherency and translate it into action that you know, the vast majority of people can understand, can afford, you know, can take to help them with this.
Absolutely agree. Now, Alan, for those considering volunteering or putting their thoughts and efforts into the program, what would you recommend to them? What if someone's considering volunteering or even getting to the level of being an ambassador with their contributions to controls and different elements that we have here at CIS, what would be some points you would recommend to them?
Well, first, get involved in the Workbench communities. That's probably the core place where they're going to get ideas or be able to share ideas. Promote what they know about the CIS controls. So part of it, for me, it wasn't really a long learning process because it started so long ago. and there wasn't a lot of competition of other types of control mechanisms out there except for NIST and ISO. To be honest, they looked at COBIT and COSO and a few of those other, I'll call them frameworks for lack of a better term, that had more specific, they had more specific audit and other functions, not just general security. And we did actually implement some of those too, because we had internal auditors and external auditors, and you know how that goes. So part of it's just having a willingness to share their knowledge. And to me, the place to start would be those communities in the Workbench, or as Tony said, on the social media side of things. But seek out ways within their local community, so their physical community, where they can help other businesses and not worry about revenue streams and things like that. And I think the volunteer part of it is a key aspect of it. So you don't expect return other than maybe someone actually successfully implementing some of the controls that they help them with. Because I go out looking for offering simple solutions if I can provide them, and making a connection with the business owners or other people in the business to help them do their business without interrupting or slowing down their business. Because that's the other big fear, like Tony said, that budgets, they're focusing on their medical practice, their law practice, their dental practice, their dry cleaning practice, and they're focused on having an income stream from that business without sidetracking off onto something they don't really know about. I think they care more about it now because it's in the news so much. but this, they only care about it at the business level. They don't care about it at the low specific, you know, what is it really going to, how is it going to impact me? And I, you do go out and, you know, I don't do the FUD expressions anymore, but you do need to tell them it's not a matter of if, it's really a matter of when something will happen. And small businesses have always been on the rise as targets because of the fact that they don't have the controls that the big companies have. So when those cyber crooks find a small business that's online, they're going to try and do what they can, you know, to disrupt it or do, you know, steal from them or something. So they do need to be aware of that aspect of it. But again, getting involved with the community, both the online community through CIS and their local community, to me is the best way to reach out and not necessarily even to become an ambassador, but just to be helpful for the community. And then maybe you become an ambassador out of that.
And I think, you know, Alan, so whether champion, but advocate, ambassador, you know, folks like you, you already were that long before we named that, but you were doing those things just because of the person that you are and your professionalism, but also your concern for your neighbors and small businesses and so forth. So everyone that I know who's, you know, under this program, yes, was that person first. And they just, we looked around and go, maybe we should call them something. Maybe we should send them nice things, or, you know, talk about their work or encourage or provide them with content or whatever, because the role that folks like you have played is just extraordinary. And again, it's driven by, you know, your concern for your neighbors, for small businesses, for the importance of technology for us as a society, and the need to have more, you know, more confidence in the way things operate. So again, good on you. And I think it's great that we can recognize that.
Yeah, part of my impetus was back in 2010, there was an organization, nonprofit, called Securing Our E-City, which was a public-private, I don't want to call it a partnership, but as a conglomeration of over 300 businesses and government agencies in the San Diego region, that their focus was how to get cybersecurity out to the masses, and especially the small businesses. So that's where I first, that was my first contact going out to small businesses, was through that group.
Mm. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Alan, we could go on for hours. I mean, your experience and everything that you've done throughout your career and continue to do, absolutely phenomenal. A big thank you, obviously, from CIS, myself, and Tony, and really the community as a whole. Your work obviously contributes to making those. Again, I think the adage was, Alan, you can lead a business to the controls, but only hope that they implement them. But still, those that do, I mean, just a big thanks for everything that you do and continue to do. It's tremendous to see and is an inspiration for many that will listen to this and really benefit from your work and your continued contribution. So thank you so much.
I hope they do. Yeah, thank you for having me. That's been great.
Absolutely. And thank you, Tony, for everything that you do as well, sir. I always appreciate it.
All good. Right back at you, Sean.
Thank you, sir. And thank you to our audience for listening. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways with your preferred podcast provider. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Questions, comments, concerns, podcast at cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.